African analysis. This is where we get to cast an eye over the rest of our continent, something which is too seldom done by other media houses, I'm afraid, but it's okay. We fill the gap, and we love to do that because we have the expertise of the great and powerful JJ Cornish. He's our man, and let us fly quickly over the continent of Africa and see what's going on. JJ, so nice to see you. How are you?
I'm immensely well, thank you. Magic. Any better, I'd have to tell the cops, you know?
Well, I do like seeing you. I like this especially because there's enough nonsense going on in the rest of the world, but Africa has its own trials and tribulations, sometimes successes and stories worth triumphing and trumpeting about. But at the moment, we've got quite a lot going on the continent. So another not so quiet week in Africa, right?
I think very busy week in Africa, and I mean, it's busy the world over, but Africa with sadness, you know, in places like Sudan and so on, very, very sad. And then north of us, people trying to get out of Africa, crossing the Mediterranean, which is getting warmer in the summer, more and more people dying doing that. But, you know, Africa is Africa. Eh?
Well, I love it. And I want to know more about this week's stories, which include Somalia, I'm afraid. It's always Somalia. Somalia is always somewhere in the top five. So apparently they got a seat on the UN Security Council.
How about that? They replace Mozambique, interestingly, because on the 7th of June, Mozambique beat Somalia 2-0 in their World Cup qualifying game. So maybe it's interesting that Mozambique should step aside for Somalia. But in all seriousness, have you ever heard of a country getting onto the United Nations Security Council, the powerhouse of the world organization, with a political assistance mission of the United Nations in place in Somalia, and the AU troops and police, effectively an AU peacekeeping mission in Somalia? Very interesting. You know, they have worked so hard, and they break my heart, that country. They work so hard to get normalization and the stability you need, vitally need, to start to grow and start to feed your people. And they managed to get Al-Shabaab, the terror group, out of the cities, but it is still able to make cause enormous damage in the rural areas, particularly in the lower Shabelle region. In March, they had in Mogadishu itself, in the capital, they had an overnight siege involving Al-Shabaab. So they're there all the time. Now, the arms embargo imposed against warlords in 1992 was lifted by the UN Security Council earlier this year. And, you know, I look back on this historically. The last time Somalia had a seat on the Security Council, this is a 2-year rotating seat. South Africa's had it 3 times in the period of its democracy. And it's voted for by the various groups, the African groups. So they voted unanimously for Somalia. They normally do that. But the last time that they had a seat was 1971 and 72 during the Siad Barre regime. And Siad Barre is one of the very seriously bad guys that turned up in Africa. He bombed Hargeisa, the capital of Somaliland, so that not one stone stood on another, you know. And eventually Somaliland, when he died, broke away. And, of course, Somaliland is still broken away. And the African Union doesn't recognize it. It's very, you know, it's a controversial country, but it is a true democracy in Africa. And I've 3 times now observed elections there. But, you know, look at Somalia, travel advisories, that is countries saying to their citizens, don't go there. United mm-hmm. States, Britain, Germany, New Zealand, Australia, Finland, Canada, you know, so this is the Security Council seat for a country that is that much in trouble. Very interesting.
Well, interesting, but then also shows you just kind of how out of touch the UN has become, because the Security Council is there to deal with things like, you know, major global conflicts. That's why it was established, the original idea of the UN anyway. The Security Council used to be the most powerful countries in the world that could bring other countries to heel if they behaved badly by consensus, and there have always been votes on the Security Council. I mean, I don't know what contribution to world peace Somalia is ever going to make when they can't even have domestic peace, but Mogadishu is not the place most people would look to when the word security comes to mind, would they?
Absolutely not. It's there to stop. Security Council moves in when there's a threat to international peace. And, you know, I mean, we talk about the way...
You mean like in Russia, you know, Ukraine, or in
Israel? You see, that's the thing. Now the Western powers, United States, Britain, and France, don't like me saying it, but I was at the United Nations for many years, and they used to cast vetoes against to protect South Africa from sanctions. And they did it many times. And they did it because the veto resolutions were introduced by, in those days, their Cold War rivals, Russia, more than even China. And so they just, as a matter of course, automatically they opposed it. And that is what we're getting in with Ukraine and Russia. What we're getting with Israel protected by the United States. No action will be taken against it in the United Nations Security Council. And certainly Israel behaves in a way that it knows that. South Africa didn't quite do that, but came close.
You know, I mean, it's just, to my mind, it just again is another nail in the coffin of the UN, because it's become a place of performative politics. It's become a place where Somalia is suddenly taken seriously as a contributor to world peace or as one of the nations that votes on the Security Council. I mean, it's almost like, you know, the nursery school where every kid has to have a chance. Anyway, I mean, look, good luck to Somalia. I suppose it's nice for them. They can say that they were on the UN Security Council once. And that they didn't really do anything besides sit there, which is really all the UN does, is sit there. So
and on the Security Council, God bless you, you make enemies. You know, I know the book I'm writing on with Lilian Schlappel, you know, he spoke about it when on the Security Council for a smallish country, even a country South Africa size, middle sized country, you don't make friends. You know, you've got to vote in a certain way. You vote against somebody on the UN Security Council or oppose a resolution, you make an enemy for a long, long time. It's a very tricky and very ticklish place to be on the Security Council.
Well, South Africa doesn't need any help on the council. We make bad friends all on our own. led by local showbiz personalities, Ghanaians have taken to the streets of the capital demanding an end to power outages. Now, this sounds very familiar. Are they also, is Eskom the main power supplier to Ghana?
No. But although Eskom was selling power all over the country, that was our big post-democracy prize. We were doing that when I was traveling the world as a guest of various countries after democracy. What are the economic steps you have taken? And I said, the only one I can really think about is we sell power to virtually everybody all the way up to the equator, but we didn't quite reach Ghana. Now, I don't know. And when we talk about power in South Africa, we don't, you know, the short sentence is the power outages are caused by failure to maintain the power stations. And because we don't budget to maintain them, because the money that should go towards maintaining the power station goes into the back sky of the fat cats at the top of the thing, and that is why we have it. I don't know if the same exists with Ghana, but they are saying, look, this is breaking down business, harming education, healthcare, daily life. We can't have it anymore. And they blocked Madina Road and had these protests. You know, I look at Ghana because it's a very interesting country to me. In my years of traveling Africa, people who have been based there always say the nicest people on the continent are the Ghanaians. And I have to say, those that I have met would confirm that to me. They're very, very, very nice people. But I did have a Chinese ambassador, and I was talking about that. And he said, I was stationed in Ghana. They are big people and clumsy.
Oh, really? So there's both a compliment and an insult. I suppose, would say, if any country has their power taken away, and by that I mean electricity, they're bound to become a little crabby, and we can speak with authority on that. So at least the Ghanaians are standing up for themselves. Doesn't take load shedding for them to get to the point where they'll react like us, huh?
And are they going to work out do they have a euphemism for it, or do they call it blackouts? They are the black stars, aren't they? So
maybe that's it. So JJ, you did tell me once about like interesting trips through Africa by boat. We know people who've gone as far up the Nile as you can go by boat. We know people have gone by car. There's the famous rallies that happen through the desert. And there are all kinds of ways to get around Africa. I'm sure someone's done it by hot air balloon by this stage. But there's a train that I think, if you really are an adventurous sort of person, this train sounds like the perfect thing to keep you busy.
It's the desert snake, the snake of the desert. You know, and I'm going to do more African tourism things for you in the weeks ahead.
Good.
But the desert snake, a single track, 704 kilometers long, from the port of Nouadhibou to the Zouerat, which is the iron ore mining area in the middle of the Sahara Desert, and it takes 22 hours. Now the train is the heaviest train on the planet because each of the it depends on the number they have 200 wagons sometimes, which weigh 84 tons a pop. And the train extends for 3 kilometers. Now, you can get on it, but you've got to find the stations on either end. It's quite an adventure. And they take one passenger car, but getting onto it is an absolute nightmare because everybody throws their kids through the window and their bags. The way to do it is to take, they have one or two free coaches, and you get on, you hitchhike a ride, and you ride illegally.
JJ, doesn't sound very first class to me. I mean, it sounds like quite a rough passage, so to speak.
No, exactly. I mean, when they talked about toilets in an empty railway carriage, you just have to say, thank God I'm male. But whatever you take to eat tastes of iron ore, because the iron ore is in powder form or in chunks. And for 22 hours, you sit there. It's not. And if you try and take a selfie, standing up and trying to get the pile of iron ore behind you, you have a very good chance of being blown out of the carriage. And, that would end you if you don't kill yourself falling, you'll die of thirst in the middle of the desert. But it just seems to be, if you like train trips, as I do, this is the one that you should do. Now, you can, as I say, take the luxury of the train carriage, and that's going to set you back all of 120 Rand for the 22-hour trip. But I would like to do the one for nothing and meet a lot of interesting people.
Listen, I mean, for 120 Rand, that's real value for money. How many kilometers? 400-odd kilometers? That's
704.
704. I mean, you could not do cheaper travel if you tried.
Absolutely not. No. And I mean, what is that? 4 cappuccinos, isn't it? 120 Rand.
Probably only 2. All right. So there's an interesting bit of travel advice from JJ Cornish this morning. You see, you get it all. You get a cornucopia of options on Africanalysis here every week. We talk politics. We talk the state of nations. We talk elections. We talk all kinds of things. You even get travel advice from JJ Cornish. It's a pleasure to have you, JJ. Nice to see you again. And we will catch up in another couple of days.
I look forward to that. Cornucopia. And by the way, Gareth, thank you so much for telling me the meaning of plethora.
Oh,
it means a lot, man.
Thank you very much. All right. That is JJ Cornish, Africanalysis, brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. Every week, every second week, rather, right here on the Podcast Party.